It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are off and running for this 20th day of December 2018, only, well, actually something like less than a day away from the winter solstice. We are right on top of the darkest day of the year. And when it's kind of rainy and stuff out there, the darkest day of the year can be downright, oh, grim. That's what it is right now. So, there we go. Happy solstice, however it is you celebrate it. We will, as I noted, have, I think, our first ever solstice on the front porch tomorrow. It's a little less than 24 hours away. The solstice will occur precisely in this here time zone at 5:23 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, tomorrow evening. So we'll just be into the solstice about airtime tomorrow when we fire up the bob signal and scatter the breadcrumb trail and gather together in the old hollowed out tree we rent from the Keebler Elves for Friday on the front porch. Okay. Let's see. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. All right, there we go. Just trying to keep everything square. Now, we begin the program every evening with thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Dr. John. Thanks, Dr. John, and thanks to Vincent. Thank you very kindly. Thanks as well to West Mesa Photography. Thank you. And thanks as well to Carl in Columbus and Bernice. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for being partial sponsors of this little independent effort at liberal and or progressive broadcasting. We couldn't get by without you. And, of course, thanks to everybody who contributes through the rest of the week and on an alfresco ad hoc basis. Where are we this evening? Well, the last of the Pullmans are gone. And So you'll have to wait till next year if you want to try them yourself. Everybody enjoy them. I hope you do. I know you will. And they should be there before New Year's, according to Paul from Parts Unknown. And thanks especially to Paul from Parts Unknown for doing that. It's become a holiday tradition here at the Horn, and it would not happen without him because they're Paul's idea and Paul's effort and Paul's painstaking, loving work. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. Very kindly. Now, where are we as of this evening? Well, we are almost done with fundraising for the month of December. And that's exciting. It's also kind of urgent. It always is. Mid to two-thirds of the month or three-fourths of the month bills coming due. And there remains, Chris in Germany kindly extended her challenge to this evening. There remains $32 on that. After that, to come even with the evening itself, would be after the $32, $335. $335, and then tomorrow. So let's just talk about finishing the week and the month and the year, and say that there's $535, and that takes care of tomorrow as well. We'll just count down from 535. Wouldn't it be neat to have a Friday on the front porch with no fundraising whatsoever? If we finish this evening, we've got fundraising free radio beginning with Solstice on the front porch. So 535, the PayPal button is over at headon.live. And if we use it and get done this evening, then we have fundraising free Solstice and fundraising free Christmas Eve and fundraising free New Year's Eve. And well, there we go. So hopefully we can do all that. We begin the program this evening, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, with breaking news. As Silent R. Lamar noted in an email just moments ago, as Howard Cosell said, "Down goes Frasier! Down goes Frasier!" And Silent R. Lamar says, "Down goes Trump!" Camp Happy-Go-Lucky, damn, I need to restock the popcorn cabinet. Oh, this is good. Note, watch for falling Republicans, as Chicken Little said. The sky is falling. The Republicans are falling. And, there's a number of different ways to interpret that. But the breaking news at the beginning of the program is that James Mattis squared away old-school hard-ass Marine has thrown in the towel and surrendered. After what Donnie Dipshit did with regard to Syria, it was a bridge too far for that old Marine. He sent a letter dated today to Julius Geezer. "I've been privileged to serve as our country's 26th Secretary of Defense, which has allowed me to serve alongside our men and women of the Department of Defense in defense of our citizens and our ideals. I'm proud of the progress that has been made over the past 2 years on some of the key goals articulated in our national defense strategy, putting the department on a more sound budgetary footing, improving readiness and lethality in our forces, and reforming the department's business practices for greater performance. Our troops continue to provide the capabilities needed to prevail in conflict and sustain strong U.S. global influence." Sounds kind of boilerplate, doesn't it? Well, it's a two-page letter, and it doesn't stay boilerplate for very long. Because he continues, "One core belief I have always held is that our strength as a nation is inextricably linked to the strength of our unique and comprehensive system of alliances and partnerships. While the U.S. remains in the indispensable nation in the free world, we cannot protect our interests or serve that role effectively without maintaining strong alliances and showing respect to those allies." That sounds like maybe a little nudge toward the chlamydia Claudius there. But then he says, "My views on treating allies with respect and also being clear-eyed about both malign actors and strategic competitors are strongly held and informed by over four decades of immersion in these issues. In other words, I know what I'm talking about, Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, and you, Cadet Bone Spurs, do not. We must do everything possible to advance an international order that is most conducive to our security, prosperity, and values, and we are strengthened in this effort by the solidarity of our alliances." And then this: "Because you have the right to have a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects, I believe it's right for me to step down from my position." In other words, you're doing everything wrong, fuckwit. And I know because I've got 40 years of experience that tells me so. We're reading between the lines here with General Mattis. The end date for my tenure is February 28, 2019. In other words, he's not going to stomp and swear and go off in a huff, or even a huff and a half. And he mentions the congressional posture hearings and the NATO defense ministerial meeting in February. And he wants to make sure that the new defense secretary is well in place before the transition of chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in September. And says he'll participate in a smooth transition. And signs it, James N. Mattis. Mike in Cascadia sent along letter just before airtime with the subject line, "Stealing from Scott, we're all screwed, Bob." And there was some reason to believe that he provided some degree of stability, but in the midst of a shitstorm, a little toy umbrella is little help. So, there you go. He makes it abundant, and then, of course, and this is the fun part, having just been slapped upside the head, Julius Geezer, of course, ran immediately to the Twitter and said, "General Jim Mattis will be retiring with distinction at the end of February after having served my administration as Secretary of Defense for the past 2 years. During Jim's tenure, tremendous progress has been made, especially with respect to the purchase of new fighting equipment. General Mattis was a great help to me in getting allies and other countries to pay their share of military obligations. A new defense secretary will be named shortly. I greatly thank Jim for his services." Well, he didn't retire. That's the whole thing. He didn't retire. He quit. And he quit because the Syria business showed that Donald J. Trump, who is, of course, an agent for a foreign power, not a very apt agent, but an agent nonetheless, he has no interest in maintaining the norms of our national existence. He can think of no one but himself. And that's not a guy you really want to work for. And meanwhile, our allies, the Kurds, who took a shitload of bullets for us, we're going to leave them hanging out to dry. Within the tender mercies of the Turks. And, of course, Erdogan in Turkey has declared Kurds, just generally, to be terrorists. And so the minute we clear out, it's going to be a bad... But I wouldn't underestimate the Kurds if I were the Turks. May not work out well for them. Hey, on the other hand, meanwhile, and this is a heck of a note, the Russians, Trump's owners are laughing at him. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. The with the claim that ISIS had been defeated, well, nobody was buying. And over at the Daily Beast, they have the story about the response of Russian state-run media to the latest from the Tangerine Tiberius. According to Julia Davis, writing at the Daily Beast, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova told state-run television, you know, the Russian answer to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, that it might be a milestone, the Syria betrayal. She said, "It's a real prospect for a political solution." And then Semyon Bagdasarov, who runs the Center for Middle Eastern and Central Asian Studies in Mother Russia, said, "Of course I support Trump leaving. I hope we'll get it and not the Turks. Control of the oil reserves in the Deir el-Zor province. I hope we get it and not the Turks. Praise God, we thank him." Speaking further on the U.S. withdrawal from Syria, Bagdasarov said, "It is total dream come true. It will be real celebration in best tradition." But he's fairly clear-eyed, Bagdasarov is. He described the Syria betrayal as part of the delirium that is constantly coming over him. "He is an interesting guy. This is like fiction novel. I feel bad for his poor defense minister. He's struggling to keep up." How about that? Now, the poor defense minister comment came in an article published at 10:35 this morning. And then the poor defense minister was gone just shortly before airtime this evening, around 5. Yeah. Evgeny Popov, who hosts a Russian state TV program called 60 Minutes, said, "Trump boldly and unceremoniously lied when he said the United States had defeated ISIS. He didn't defeat them. The Russian military did." But then he said, as far as the U.S. getting out of Syria, "I don't believe it. We'll see about that." And then there's the evening with Vladimir Solovyev. Vladimir Solovyev apparently being a bit of a smartass. He said, "They suddenly noticed that they had defeated ISIS. Yesterday they hadn't, but today they did. Trump woke up this morning, looked up, ISIS is gone. Yesterday was there, but today is gone." I'm sure it's much funnier in the original Russian. Meanwhile, in the last couple of months, ISIS have slaughtered something on the order of 700 of its prisoners as the news tightens about it. Yeah. But nobody in Russia thinks that their puppet, in whom they had so much hope, is working out particularly well. Alexei Kondratiev, who is part of the Russian upper house of parliament and deputy chairman of the Committee on Defense and Security, said, "Today Trump simply wake up on the wrong side of bed. They will do no such thing, the Americans leaving. They've been leaving Afghanistan for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And yes, this is old cousin Yvonne Kincaid translating here. So, taken together, it does. I wonder if anybody's told him that the Russians are laughing at him. I don't know whether to hope they have or haven't. As Darlene in Connecticut puts it, subject line, Russian roulette. So, as each cabinet member gets picked off, which one is or might be the author of the anonymous op-ed of some months back, reassuring us that there is an adult in the room just asking? The best analysis I saw said Mattis. We'll see. We'll see. But he's sticking around till the last day of February. So I guess he's going to, what, keep his counsel for two more months? But it's kind of hard to laugh about all of this. Because this is serious business. And of course, there is of course risk involved with the withdrawal, if it actually happens. God almighty, the Republicans in Congress, usually the ones who have their noses buried deepest in Donald Trump's thinning, graying pubes. And there goes dinner at 6:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yep, I just ruined dinner in the Central Time Zone, I do believe. But they were not at all pleased about the cut and run from Syria. But then again, Congress, the Republican Congress, the waning days of the Republican Congress, have gotten a little dose of their own medicine, haven't they? Because there they were, Mitch McConnell's Republican Senate, singing Christmas carols on the floor of the Senate of the United States. No kidding, it happened. As they joined together in a bipartisan spirit of good fellowship, and passed a continuing resolution last night that would keep the government going into January, so that the new Congress could then deal with the matters at hand. And the House was ready to take it all up. The Republican House. But then people like Jim Jordan and Paul Gosar, you remember Paul Gosar, the good judge of character because he's a dentist, that Paul Gosar, they began throwing a hissy fit and saying, we got to build that wall. And so it appears that Donald J. Trump, a millionaire, he has a mansion and a yacht, is going to have his the shutdown that he agreed to take the blame for. Because he said he absolutely will not sign a bill that does not give in to his ransom demand for $5 billion for steel slats. That's the new magic word. We're going to have a wall, and it's going to have steel slats, and you're going to be able to see through it. Dude, that's not a wall anymore. When you're dealing with slats, you're either dealing with a bed frame or a fence. And in this case, it's a fence. It's also offensive. It's not funny, this madness. As things like civic engagement and so forth are concerned. Well, thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Happy holidays to you and yours as well. Silent R. Lamar wishing happy holidays to the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thank you. Thank you, Lamar. Dave in Tallahassee says, hey, Bob, how about the Minister of Defense of Russia? I'm sure Vlad could let him do the work part-time, come back to Russia on weekends, of course. My Festivus grievance against Trump is that he's an imbecile. Remember, Festivus isn't over until I'm pinned. Signed, your buddy Dave. Well, I ain't a-wrestling you. You'll have to take up your grievances and feats of strength with somebody else, Dave. My dance card is booked. Yeah, meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, oh, please, God, I hope nobody tells him that the Russians are laughing at him. The last thing we need is him getting into a nuclear dick-measuring contest with the 5-foot-6-inch guy who likes to wrestle polar bears butt-naked.
Oh, there's it.
Dinner in the Central Time Zone is taking a real beating right now with an image like that. All that sweating and grunting and, Vlad, you were great. You remind me of Ivanka. And meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport says, yikes, Afghanistan, via MSNBC on Twitter, Matt Taibbi reporting the White House has ordered the Pentagon to draw up plans for troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. Well, you know, we never should have been there. But the problem with letting him do the withdrawal is that you know that it comes with strings attached. I think that's a fair way of describing it. This man doesn't do anything that he does not have orders from Moscow for. No way. Mm-mm. So that's where we find ourselves as we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Christopher, way up in the far Northwest Territory, even more frozen than our dear friend Lauren in the far frozen wastes of Alberta. In this case, probably Alberta Stan. Thank you very kindly, Christopher. And so, let's see, let's do some ciphering. So, we're down to $517 to go to finish the month, or finish the week, finish the month, finish the year, qualify for the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge and the Go Bucks Challenge. $517 to go. And, hey, as an added bonus, Christmas at the Kincaids is probably going to be a shiny new set of tires. I know. Isn't that just romantic and sexy as hell? Yeah. I got to tell you, this being housebound business for the last couple of days is beginning to get under my skin a little bit. Because I just don't feel real safe toddling along on that limp along donut spare. Yeah, that's another ambition. Put a real tire under the vehicle for next time I have to have a spare tire. Real spare tires are real cool. But I found out the new used wheel was supposed to be here today. It'll be here about this time tomorrow. Which means if I'm lucky, I get up at like 6 o'clock Saturday morning and pray that I can make it to the tire store and get the thing remounted and balanced and all that crap before noon, because otherwise it'll be like Wednesday and I will be crazier than an outhouse rat by then. Hey, thank you very kindly to John. Thank you, John, for jumping in. 507 now. 507 to go. Thank you. Steve, from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Subject line, civics question. Concerning the shutdown, couldn't the Senate override his veto, or being it's budgetary, is that not an option? Well, it's not just the Senate. If you want to override a veto, you got to have a two-thirds majority in both houses. And that means that the Democrats would have to do all the heavy lifting on it. And even so, might not be able to reach the threshold. There might not be enough Republicans willing to not fuck people like TSA workers and folks of that ilk in government service. I don't know if there's... That's 67 members of the United States Senate, and I don't know what two-thirds of the House is. Somebody else, that's a much larger number, and somebody else is going to have to do the do the ciphering. But, it's possible if he vetoes it. The House would have to pass the Senate bill and send it on to him to make him veto it. So, that's the drama. Irish Dave saying, so is premature withdrawal a sign of empire and full retreat? You know, America's interruptus? We needed to be, we never needed to be in Afghanistan. It was a fool's war from the beginning. As I said time after time after time after time, Alexander the Great, one of the great tacticians of human history, could not hold Afghanistan. And we are, and when it comes to our military, we are fresh out of Alexander the Great's. We have bureaucrats and functionaries. No Alexander the Greats. Caesar took and held the whole of Gaul. But he never had any, and before he was killed, he was going to head out to hand the Parthians a lesson for pouring molten gold down his buddy Crassus's throat. But the Ides of March intervened there and made a mess of that. 290. Thank you for doing thank you for being the ad hoc horn ciphering department, Irish Dave. 290. It would take 290 votes to override a veto in the House. So there's that. Meanwhile, he is, and all of this, you never know what exactly is motivated. When you're dealing with madness, you never know what the trigger will be. And so in the Washington Post, lo and behold, appeared an op-ed by a former member of the United States Navy. It was published today by Sarah Armstrong. Sarah Armstrong, having been a former member of the Navy, graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, former officer. Works at Protect Democracy. She wrote in today's paper, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis in early December, she used his name. I wonder if he actually resigned or was he fired? And for the sake of protocol and stability, agreed to call it a resignation. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis in early December approved plans to extend the deployment of active U.S. duty troops at the southern border from December 15th until January 31st, taking the deployment through the holiday season. Scholars and pundits have debated the legalities of the decision to send the military to the border and the rules of engagement while there. These are serious questions, and I'm sure the conversations will continue long after the troops leave. But I worry that lost amid both sides of the debate is a basic fact about members of the military. They are people. Troops don't deserve to be used as pawns in a political game to rally the president's base. The men and women in uniform that I worked beside every day as a junior naval officer warrant much more respect. But as it turns out, according to Military Times, 4,000 active duty troops will remain on the border spread across California, Arizona, and Texas. These service members will repair and install wire barriers and provide transportation and security for Border Patrol agents. How'd that work out when little Jacqueline Call was dying for water? It's shameful She writes, when I was serving, I had faith that everyone up the chain of command, including the president, had the common goal of protecting Americans. Naturally, I didn't always have a sense of the larger strategic plans behind the orders given. Many daily military tasks feel dumb and tedious, from shining boots to filling bureaucratic forms. But it was possible to perform the tasks knowing that we had a shared purpose. We used the catchphrase, embrace the suck. You know, you knew that these tasks fit into the larger mission. I wonder if service members today can say that. She closes saying, this holiday season, I'm fortunate and grateful to be with my family. But as I think about service members who are not so lucky, who didn't ask to be at the border, I hope that Americans, including those in Congress and the White House, will spare a thought for them and their sacrifice amid the celebrations. Well, you know, ma'am, you can hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. Because there is not a single human being in the White House, assuming there are human beings in the White House, who gives a good old-fashioned tinker's damn about members of the military as anything other than the pawns that you decried in your article. They are toys. They are display items. They are things to make the orange Julius geezer feel better about himself. Because there is so very little to him. And she knew it. She knew it. Sarah Armstrong did. Because she also said, President Trump has consistently shown a lack of respect for the military and their families' sacrifices. He has yet to visit service members overseas and has even publicly fought with Gold Star families of service members killed in the line of duty. With this president, his only mission seems to be serving himself. And that's all there is to it. What else? Well, in the midst of the business of pulling out of Syria, he also celebrated, this is not a joke, this is not something that I came up with trying to figure out a way to gin up a cheap laugh. The Farm Bill has been signed into law. And it's rather a groundbreaking farm bill, and it's also a rat fuck of a farm bill. It's groundbreaking because it legalizes the growing of industrial hemp. Because industrial hemp is not a Schedule I narcotic. You can't get high on it. You could set fire to a goddamn bale of it and sit there and use a vacuum cleaner to hoover the smoke into your lungs, and all you'd get is smoke inhalation sickness and a probably pretty nasty headache. And decades, if not generations, after we should have figured that out, we finally have, so that's a big deal. On the other hand, also, we're gonna fuck a lot of hungry people. Yeah. Because something like, oh, goodness me, what, I want to make sure I get the number right. 800,000 people are going to be kicked off food stamps. Merry Christmas, y'all. Food stamps that are already miserable and miserly and measly and pitiful and pathetic. Don't spend that $2 a day all in one place there, hungry American. And don't be thinking you're going to be able to get the fancy ramen with the flavor boost packets either. You'll eat the 25 cents a pack ramen and be goddamn glad to have it. If you put a few stolen tomato ketchup packets on it, it'll almost be like spaghetti. We'll get into that in a minute. But in preparation for the signing of the farm bill, Donald Trump actually tweeted this.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
My wife.
Goodbye, City Line.
Green Acres, we are there.
I wish I was kidding. Farm bill signing in 15 minutes. Hashtag Emmys. Hashtag TBT. That was a bit that he did with Megan Mullally at the Emmys years and years and years and years and years ago, celebrating Green Acres. And they put him in a pair of overalls with a dumb straw hat and invited him up to sing. Because, see, back then he was a reality television star. His mind was on his big star turn in the Emmys broadcast, even as the government was on the verge of shutting down. Jesus. Woof. Wow. Just freaking wow. Can you imagine the outrage of the Stuart Varneys and the Tucker Carlsons and the Lou Dobbses and those goobers on a couch over at Fox News, you know, Fox and Fiends in the morning, if Barack Obama had ever appeared wearing overalls? Jesus, the sharecropper jokes wouldn't have. They'd still be circling the earth. Okay, I won't, Steve. Please don't tell me that was him and Ivanka. No, it was him and Megan Mullally. You know, from. Oh, damn, what was that show? It came back. But. Oh, why can't I remember it? Well, somebody, not a big TV, it wasn't a big TV watcher, but it, still, yeah, really. And the entire Congress was scrambling, trying to figure out if there was a way to stop a government shutdown that was occasioned entirely by a temper tantrum thrown by a mental deficient in the White House. And he's tweeting himself singing the Green Acres song. Because when he thinks about farming, he thinks about Oliver Wendell Douglas. Right. Probably sees himself in Oliver Wendell Douglas. Will and Grace. Thank you, Jack. Thank you. Megan Mullally from Will and Grace. God knows she wore... didn't she win her fair share of Emmys over that program? Yeah. And that's another thing with the... because, you know, we've talked about this for almost 2 years now. That somehow or another, Jim Mattis, one hoped, would be some sort of a buffer against the crazy. That maybe he could rally the cabinet together when it became apparent that the President of the United States was barking mad. And that maybe the gravitas that he would bring with his four decades of service to the United States of America via the Marine Corps would somehow be enough to sway the cabinet to make Mike Pence sign the 25th Amendment letter. And, well, I guess that could still happen between now and February 28th. But I have lost pretty much all faith in the operative value of the 25th Amendment. It's too clunky. It's too cumbersome. It requires people to do things that they would never do within our modern political culture. A president picks you to be a cabinet secretary, a position of great import and dignity and power and influence. Pretty much guarantees you a comfortable life for the remainder of your days. And no way you're going to turn on that guy, no matter how nuts he is. Because, you see, once you sign your name to the 25th Amendment letter, with the possible exception of the vice president signing the letter as required by that provision, nobody's ever going to trust you again. It's sort of it's similar to the outcome of the murder of Julius Caesar. Cassius and Brutus and the rest of the conspirators went running out of the Senate House over at the Theater of Pompey, waving liberty caps and declaring an end to the dictatorship, only to find a Roman populace that was furious that they had murdered a man who had more often than not spoken up for the poor over the rich. And so Brutus and Cassius and the rest of the murderers, the assassins, holed up on the Palatine Hill, I think it was. Maybe it was the Capitoline Hill, I'm not sure. Until it was safe to take it on the lam. Because they suddenly realized no one was ever going to trust them again. And they wound up getting their ass handed to them by Marcus Antonius at the Battle of Pharsalia? Was it Pharsalia? Can't recall. But and see, the thing is, even if the vice president signing the 25th Amendment letter trusts you, he will forever know that you signed one letter and you might sign another one. And what's more, if the thing gets thrown into the Congress, the deposed president might very well wind up being put back into office. Like I said, it's clunky, it's unworkable, and as we've proven in the last 2 years, it is of absolutely no value whatsoever. At least that particular section of the 25th Amendment. Hoo-wee. Oh, and thank you. More math. Bill in Allentown, two-thirds of the House is 292 to be exact. Thank you. Thank you. Scott in San Diego, subject line, Trump's marching orders from Moscow. Given the pace of global developments, I'm guessing these orders weren't conveyed during the 2016 campaign, so they must be arriving in real time. Who's in this scheme with Trump? You got to know that he's not bright enough to do anything on his own, and let's face it, happenstance has its limits. Somebody on the domestic side would have to be lending a hand. I'm curious about the mechanics and personnel involved here. Me too. And I'm guessing it's somebody inside the Trump organization. Don Jr. has shown a predilection for working with skeevy Russians. Ivanka doesn't get so much mention. So, is she a possibility? Yeah. And again, there's a story out there. I don't have it in front of me. You'll have to go and look it up. I read it the other day. But it has to do with a bank in Russia, not Cyprus, a bank in Russia that was noticed to be pinging a Trump server repeatedly and for no known reason. It sure smelled like a back channel, though. And I can't help wondering, as I close the program with this last night, I can't help wondering if that bank is the subject of the subpoena, the double secret probation subpoena that caused the fifth floor of the U.S. district of the U.S. Circuit Court to be cleared out last week. All we know is it's a corporation owned entirely by the foreign country where it is located. Maybe is that where the messages are coming from? Kind of makes you wonder if maybe Mueller's team might do well to drop a search warrant on it, because, well, that's not on the president. That's on his properties, and that is on a server. Seeing as how the Republicans seem so willing to get upset about private servers. Silent R. Lamar says, just off the top of my head, may I say within my short 60 years on this blue dot, I have worked in state and federal as well as the private workforce. I'm still a state employee from Reagan to now. I have to live through government shutdowns. I say back in Reagan times they would make up for your losses, but today's Congress, you're screwed. And the part I like are the people who have no idea what happened when you shut down the government. I laugh at the faces of those people who are mad their check was not in the mail. Just saying, you get what you want. When you ask for something, you should know how it works. Government workers put those checks in the mail. The post office just delivers them. And these same people get mad at the post office. You figure? Oh, probably. Probably. Continuing, Silent R. Lamar says, as far as the presidential veto is concerned, if the Senate were to go for veto override, if they got the two-thirds needed, the House would follow. The only way it wouldn't work if the House Republicans didn't help their own members in the Senate. Well, there's another problem, though, Lamar, and that is that, being the time of year that it is, a whole bunch of Republican members of the House who no longer have jobs have already quit the place. What's the old saying? The people have spoken, the bastards. And so they've quit, and they're not coming back. Bob Corker left the Senate today and said, goodbye, y'all. I don't reckon I'll probably be seeing y'all again real soon. Jeff Flake, pretty much the same. So it may be a done deal that there's nothing to do but let Trump shut down the government. Which, in and of itself, is more than a little bit unsettling. Yeah. Like I said, a lot of thorns. A lot of thorns this evening. Bunches and bunches. And, of course, here at about with about 5 minutes remaining in the first hour of the program, let me suggest that you're welcome to share the thorns in your side, the bees under your bonnet, the burrs under your saddle. The number, of course, if you just happen to have stumbled onto this program and you're, what in the hell am I hearing? The number is 304-574-8178. You can also reach the program via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And then, of course, toll free if you need us to pay the freight on the phone call, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. And if you don't need the toll free, 304-640-2829. And it all gets you onto the program, and by golly, I like to think this is some of the easiest conversation, easiest radio call-in kind of thing that that there exists out there. And a huge thank you, going out to Clarence. Thank you so much, Clarence. A big chunk just got taken out of fundraising for the evening. We have thanks to Chris. In the Northwest Territories, Chris in Germany's challenge was finished off, and then John jumped in and took us down to a grand total of 507, and now, thanks to Clarence, we're down to 407. Bob, I wish you and your family the best new year that you deserve. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. Well, you know, Clarence, I cannot thank you enough, and as with everyone, thank you. As we rush headlong toward the end of 2018, thank you for being part of this community, and thank you all for bolstering each other and keeping all of this going so that we have somewhere to gather and engage in conversation and discussions born of goodwill, with no interruption from right-wingers or maggots or anything of the sort. This is the height of my day. Thank you. So thank you again this evening to Christopher and to John and to Clarence. So we've got a fighting chance to finish off this evening. And I'll say this. I expect us, by the way, this is just programming note. I expect us to have a solstice on the front porch tomorrow. But if by some chance the new used wheel arrives, I will hightail it over to the tire place and get it installed and try to get everything sorted out so that there won't be quite so much pressure. And there is an outside chance that I'll be into the evening getting back here if I can get that done. Okay? So by no means am I saying there won't be a program tomorrow, but there's an outside chance that there won't be. And so if we can knock out that other $407 this evening, then that makes it a little less stressful if I do wind up having to be away from the microphone. Because, you know, here at the mansion, we live a quintessentially everyday existence. No no Gulfstream 5s, no Olympic-sized kidney-shaped swimming pools, no masseur for Agnes or a cabana assistant or anything like that. This is rather a plebeian lifestyle and home and family. And so with that in mind, it creates a sense of kinship. So again, thank you to all of you who keep this program on the air. It is the top of the hour, and I wouldn't want to miss this evening, because this is the last Green News Report for the, till January the 8th. Brad and Desi are knocking off in a big way for a couple of weeks, so enjoy it. This is basically, not their year-end review. I don't guess they really did one of those, but, let's find out what sort of madness is going on out in the wonderful world of, you know, the environment.
It's Thursday, December 20, 2018.
There's all kinds of weather emergencies and challenges that all of the services are dealing with on the climate side.
Climate change is expensive, particularly for the U.S. military. 2018 on track to be fourth costliest year for U.S. weather disasters. Polls show Americans waking up to climate change. Plus,
we know what we must do. Now we have to have the vision, the courage, and the competence to do it.
Cities and states step up, setting ambitious new climate goals.
All of that ambition and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We're saying goodbye to another member of Trump's cabinet, Secretary of the Interior and Dudley Do-Wrong, Ryan Zinke. He had so many scandals that the White House officials told him he had until the end of the year to leave or be fired. That is impressive. Getting fired for ethics violations in the Trump administration is like being fired from the Rockettes for kicking.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as we wrap up another year, we're starting to add up the math of the cost of climate change.
Yes, because climate change disasters are expensive. 2018 will likely rank among the top 4 years on record in the U.S. for the highest number of weather disasters in a single year, costing more than $1 billion. Remember Hurricane Michael, the near Category 5 hurricane that made that historic landfall in the Florida Panhandle in October? Well, during a little-noticed Senate Armed Services Committee hearing last week, it was revealed that Florida's Tyndall Air Force Base alone suffered about $5 billion in damage.
Wow.
U.S. Secretary of the Navy Richard Spencer warned that all coastal U.S. military facilities are vulnerable to climate impacts.
It's going to be oceanfront areas, water rising issues. It's going to be areas exposed to what we've seen now as 100-year storms that come every 2 or 3 years. We're going to have to start addressing this so we do this correctly and spend the money correctly.
Huh. $5 billion it's going to cost to fix Tyndall Air Force Base? Isn't $5 billion the money that Donald Trump has been denied to build his wall on the Mexican border?
Good point. Donald Trump aside, Americans are waking up to the need for action on climate change, according to a new Reuters poll that found broad consensus. More than 70% agreed with the statement that the U.S. should take aggressive action to slow global warming and that it poses an imminent or serious threat to the United States, including a majority of Republicans. A different poll from Yale Climate Communications found strong bipartisan support for the Green New Deal. That's a proposal from some Democrats to accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels to clean renewable energy. The Green New Deal would set a national target of 100% zero carbon electricity by 2030, upgrade the nation's energy grid, buildings, transportation infrastructure, and energy efficiency, and provide training for the jobs to accomplish it all. 80% of respondents supported that, including 60% of Republicans. However, Huffington Post warns that previous research shows voter support for bipartisan policies tends to collapse when they're told it's supported by a politician from the opposite party. So get ready for the climate change denial industry to smear the Green New Deal as a partisan policy to undermine it.
and to undermine the majority Republican support for it.
Yep. More good news. The City Council of the District of Columbia has passed one of the most ambitious clean energy bills in the United States, setting a target of switching to 100% renewable electricity by 2032, just 14 years, meaning that soon even the White House is going to run on renewable energy. In New York, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo has committed to a statewide target of 100% carbon neutral electricity by 2040 as part of a statewide Green New Deal. In Minnesota, the city of Minneapolis has adopted plans to phase out polluting diesel-powered buses and shift its entire bus fleet to all electric. But California is going even further. California is now the first state in the nation to mandate eliminating fossil fuels from public transit buses. The California Air Resources Board voted unanimously to require all new buses in the state to be zero emissions by 2029 and a target of transitioning the state's entire fleet of 12,000 buses to carbon-free by 2040. Partially paid for by the state's settlement with German automaker Volkswagen over its illegal emissions cheating software.
That'll teach them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. We'll be off for a bit over the holidays, so from Desi and me to all of you, here's to a safe and warm,
but not too warm,
holiday season. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Red nose on the reindeer, tinsel on the tree, but it's a green Christmas for me.
And hour number two is underway at this point, this Solstice Eve 2018. Brother Deacon Asa says, you got to stop living the Slim Pickens life and get on that Kremlin dole, Bob. I hear it's good eatings. Yeah, but if you get on the RT dole, sooner or later, you begin to, well, I don't know. Maybe some people don't. Maybe some people just say, hey, the check cleared. I don't think I could do that. I just don't. Meanwhile, going back to General Mattis, Scott with a note. He's showing no signs of being this generation's Smedley Butler. P.S. You just got to know that Putin's finding this task not at all requiring any heavy lifting whatsoever. One wonders if and how much NSA or related agency is keeping track of these communications, orders, from Moscow. Oh, they probably have no knowledge of it whatsoever. It's probably buried inside the gristle of an overdone New York strip steak or hidden in the bottle of ketchup that he dumps all over it. Oh, God. Let's see. There goes dinner in the mountain time zone. Hey, yeah. I had a note from Megan, who reminded me of something that I had on the radar to bring up for conversation. The story came out a couple of days ago, but do you remember after he melted down and behaved in a completely unethical appearance of impropriety, actual impropriety fashion during his confirmation hearings, and I'm talking here about Brat Kavanaugh. Remember that? Well, a whole bunch of people filed ethics complaints against him. And we now have the outcome of those ethics complaints. Zoe Tillman wrote it up for BuzzFeed News. And she did not bury the lead. All of the ethics complaints filed against Justice Brett Kavanaugh during his confirmation proceedings were dismissed on Tuesday. You got to, all of them. No matter how egregious his conduct, no matter how violative of the canons of judicial ethics, the panel reviewing the complaints just 86'd them. Didn't even get to the merits. Didn't care. You know why? Because they reached the conclusion that because he now sits on the Supreme Court of the United States, wait for it, Brett Kavanaugh is no longer subject to the law. No, really. They concluded that they did not have jurisdiction over him, and that because he had ascended to the Supreme Court of the United States, the judiciary disciplinary process no longer applied to him. He was not a member of the Supreme Court when he engaged in those unseemly, histrionic, temper tantrums. I remember him asking Senator Amy Klobuchar, who grew up in an alcoholic home and who bears those scars, "Don't you like beer?" And she was as stone-faced as a graven image when he asked her that. But here's the sad fact. Technically speaking, the judges to whom, in the Tenth Circuit, to whom the complaints had been referred, did not err in their decision. And this is one of those things like, the Electoral College, that we don't think about as often as perhaps we should. But the justices of the Supreme Court of the United States are literally a law unto themselves. They literally are above the law. I mean, let's just take a hypothetical. Let's say there's a litigant. And let's say that litigant knows a member of the Supreme Court. And let's say that litigant and that member of the Supreme Court, since they've been friends all along, decide that they want to go out duck hunting by themselves. And the entire country is shocked and dismayed at such obviously unethical conduct. And let's say that the litigant and the Supreme Court justice each agreed to say, "Well, there was nothing unethical about it because we didn't discuss the case." Even if they sat there in the duck blind all day long, talking about nothing but the case. Well, there were no witnesses, and dead ducks tell no tales. We really should address this sometime, because it's proven historically to create some problems. It was, for instance, an open secret in Washington, D.C., that for years and years and years, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, William Rehnquist, was a junkie. Now, that's not an insult. That is a colloquial term that we use to describe people who are hopelessly addicted to opioids. And see, when you're Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, they just keep writing your script. And you don't get treated like garbage, like ordinary folks do, say, who maybe got hurt on the job, got an opioid prescription while they recovered, and then by the time they recovered, found out that they were hopelessly addicted, and then got cut off by their doctor. There's a thing going around in the country today. I ran across it just the other day, a news story, lovingly provided to me by Agnes, that says that in 2018 America, the number of people being, given the scourge that opioids have been determined to be, that as more and more people are cut off from opioids, more and more patients are driven to suicide. And it details the story of a man from Tennessee, this news article. Jay Lawrence got his back broken in 1980, but eventually was given, because he was in excruciating pain that literally drove him to tears, he was given a bunch of surgeries. They chiropractored him to pieces. They sent him to physical therapy until he constantly felt like he'd been in a bar fight. And as a last resort, his doctor finally gave him a morphine prescription for 120 milligrams a day. And that's a lot of morphine. But it made it possible for him to live at least a simulacrum of a normal life. But last February, when he went to the doctor said, listen, I'm going to cut your prescription down to 90 milligrams. And pretty soon you'll be on 30 milligrams, and then you're going to be on none. Because the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had released new prescribing guidelines. And as soon as they started dosing him down, titrating him down, the pain came back, and he said, it feels like every nerve in my body is on fire. And so on the day in March of last year, when he was to have his next medical appointment, he and his wife, Meredith, took a walk in the park. And they went to the place where they had renewed their wedding vows 2 years previous. And they held hands, and he took out a gun, and at 58 years old, he shot himself in the heart. Well, see, they don't do that to a sitting Supreme Court justice, like the junkie William Rehnquist. They just keep giving him the dope and hope that it doesn't, you know, cause his mind to go so far afield that, and you don't really have to worry about that with a guy like Rehnquist, because he was going to do mean, evil, nasty, hateful shit to ordinary Americans anyway, because, well, that's the kind of guy that William Rehnquist was. And that wasn't any hypothetical about the goddamn duck blind. That was Count Dicula and his bosom buddy, fat, now dead, Tony Scalia. And Scalia just said, hey, we didn't talk about the case. What the fuck? And Count Dicula said, we definitely didn't talk about the case, even though I'm pretty sure I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. And there are numerous other examples. Now, oddly enough, it turns out that when our side gets a conflict of interest, ostensibly our side, your Sonia Sotomayor's, your Elena Kagan's, they tend to bail out because they take that appearance of impropriety shit seriously. But your Federalist Society types, nah, not so much. Because they know they are above the law. Not theoretically, not hypothetically, but actually. That the only thing anybody can do about it, if they don't like their unethical behavior, is to impeach them. And that means getting the House to hold the necessary hearings to get rid of him, and then getting the Senate to come up with 67 votes to say, you gotta go. No Supreme Court justice has ever been removed from office by that method. There was an early attempt, and it didn't happen. And by early, I mean the Jefferson administration. And so Brett Kavanaugh gets to sit up there on the Supreme Court, pass judgment upon everyone short of Almighty God itself, and know that no one will ever again look into his gambling habits, look into how it was he managed to live in a millionaire's house on a government judge salary. No one will ever examine again the business with the baseball tickets. No one will ever again wonder what PJ and Squee know or knew. And while Dr. Christine Blasey Ford continues to receive death threats, well, life is good for Brett Kavanaugh. And nobody who knew about the process expected anything other than that to be the outcome. So let's once again remind ourselves that the notion that the Supreme Court of the United States is some sort of bastion of nobility is a pipe dream at best. Remember that when some case touching upon the various and sundry malefactions of Donald J. Trump finds its way to the Supreme Court, where Brett Kavanaugh nor Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, neither one of them, will have to recuse themselves unless they have some sudden and entirely alien onset of conscience. And even if they're sitting in judgment of the guy who gave them their jobs, there's not a soul on earth who can force them to acknowledge their conflict of interest and remove themselves from the consideration of the case. And, of course, they would never do that because that would create a seven-member Supreme Court in which there would be a four to three majority of liberal justices, so-called liberal justices, on it. Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan versus Alito, Roberts, and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. Yeah, maybe just make a little note about that. Because when you hear Gorsuch and Kavanaugh say, well, I can be totally neutral in this. I'm a good professional judge with abiding principles of originalism and dedication to the textual interpretation of the con. The fix is in. It's a boat race. So we're moving rapidly onto the halfway point of the program, and I just saw where Steve from Georgistan in the chat room said, most progressive radio is on vacation after tomorrow until 2019. Not this one. Tell your friends and neighbors, please. Let's resolve, there's that word, let's resolve that in 2019 we're going to build our community so that we can bring more people in to participate in it and enjoy the good fellowship that we all have here. Tell your friends and neighbors that there is going to be live progressive radio next week, and that it'll happen from a little studio deep in the hills of almost level West by Coal, Trump Genius Stan. What do you say? Okay. Let's there's more stuff because I want to get back to the food stamp thing and explain that it ain't just Trump, but this is in fact a great big old wet sloppy kiss on the end of Paul Ryan's nose. From Donald J. Trump as Ryan heads out the door. 800,000 people are going to go hungry now, thanks to these goddamn Republicans. How about that? Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, if the posse ain't shot.
It is that, Jim. It is that.
Indeed it is. This drive will have its way at least someway. But you know, going back to the Supreme Court, you know, we've had some interesting decisions that have been adjudicated by that August body. I was just thinking rather haphazardly about number one, the promotion of eugenics. And long before the Nazis ever thought about it, and some of the things that they did in that Supreme Court that actually...
Yeah, what did Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. say? Three generations of imbeciles is enough?
That's it, sure did. But, you know, eugenics was a very strong movement in this country.
Oh, yes, it was. And it was rapidly picked up by other countries.
Yeah, by, you know, who? Adolf and France. But nonetheless, they just did written stuff. In other words, what I'm saying is a lot of bad practices in European history have been picked up from us and the way we treated people here in this country. Whether it's going to be the Indians or blacks or people who were not exactly born right, so to speak, and they had some type of disability or whatever. And, you know, that's something we need to think about. it's kind of like, you know, it's coming back to haunt us. We've got a lot of bad shit, is what I'm trying to say. And we've covered it up pretty well. But there are a lot of things that are now coming to light. And if you watch it,
all right, you should be back now. I wish I knew why that happened, but I don't.
Oh, well, you need to send a Blue Suit dentist over there, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh. No, I was just saying that there are a lot of bad things. We've been really, in a certain way, a very bad influence on other parts of the world. And
well, let me ask you another question. How bad do things have to be for a squared away 4-decade Marine to cut and run?
A hell of a lot. That's all I can say.
This is a guy who was schooled on the storming of Chapultepec in Mexico City by the Marines. That's where we get the Halls of Montezuma business. This is a guy who was schooled on the battle whose commemoration Donald Trump bailed out on, in which the Marines faced unbearable, intolerable odds. This is a Marine who was schooled on pick one: Guadalcanal, Peleliu, Okinawa, and he bailed.
Oh,
and he cut.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm not casting dishonor on James Mattis. I wondered why the hell he took the job in the first place if he had any of that vaunted honor of the Corps.
I don't know, but I'm sure after he did, he realized it's just that he had ripped me. Really pulled the motor. And, you know, these other Marines in other parts of the military are getting damn tired of Trump using them as, you know, chess pieces on a board or some type of example to support, you know, his rather sagging realm of popularity. I don't know what is his base now. 38%, 42.
38 is absolutely the high end. But I wonder if the generals and the admirals are finally understanding how grave things are, because in large part, you know, they haven't really felt up until now the touch of his madness. It's been other departments that have. But now it's on them, and you reckon, I mean, just because, you know, you work there and you know how the system works and you know the culture, you reckon there are some rather serious conversations taking place in hushed tones in the corners of bars and whatnot in D.C. this evening?
I would hope so, yeah. Probably are. But you know, the thing about it is, they are backed up by these big contractors and stuff like that who really go the seventh limit to not only bend the law, but just break it. And they've been very attractive for the people in high military positions to accept all this money and, you know, these new appropriations and things of that nature. And in many cases, they will tell you it's for equipment we don't need. And, you know, they realize that, but they realize if they don't take it, then, you know, their mother load is somewhat attenuated. So there it is. I mean, you know, money is ruining the game, and unfortunately, it does besmirch the honor of people in all branches of the armed service.
You know, not too long back, Jim, people were talking, and it was got pretty noisy about how he had never even deigned to visit any of the troops in any forward combat zones. You reckon that's why all of a sudden he's in a? I mean, this who knows why or how he makes a decision? You reckon maybe that's why he wants to pull out from Afghanistan, because he's too damn scared to go there and he's in a bind?
Oh, no. He might well be. I mean, he might be scared of catching a lucky bullet. Oh, Lord, that'd be something, too. And I don't know. I agree with the Russians. And they say, oh, yeah, we're pulling out. We've been pulling out for 20 years. And what are we really going to do? How much of this is real witness wrestling? Whatever.
Well, remember that article from years and years and years ago? I think you and I even discussed it when it was announced that geologists had discovered vast reserves of rare earth elements under the ground in Afghanistan.
Tungsten, all kinds of stuff. Yes, sir.
And I said, well, you know, we're not going to walk away from that.
No, we're not. And neither are those people who have much closer proximity to those people than we do. And, you know, one day they're going to find the time to go on over there. And, you know, it's a relatively poor nation. And it wouldn't take a whole lot for China or even the Russian Republic to go over there with China and just split it up and help themselves. I mean, they only have a few hundred miles to go, right? If we go and stay over there, we've got, what, 14,000 miles to go?
Yeah, and it's not like when we get out, Russia's going to run right in. China's going to run right in.
Well, yeah. And the Chinese are really getting awfully aggressive in a lot of their things. I mean, now, this movement in China to persecute this Chinese minister, or I don't know what he is, but he's the head of a church there. And it's real popular. Now, I think he's probably in jail. And, you know, they're not going to let him out ever. Because the type of church they have in China, I think basically it's a state church, and it's, you know, it's like the only church you've ever seen.
Well, everything's a state thing. I don't know if you caught Dr. Bill yesterday, but he had an absolutely magnificent guest on, a China expert by the name of Professor Kevin Shanley. And they spent 2 hours talking China policy. And,
really?
Yeah, and they talked about the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, and one of the things that Dr. Shanley pointed out is that the Chinese at present don't need to project power via military force, that they do it by economic force. They come in and they say, hey, can we build you some roads? Hey, can we build you some dams? Oh, yeah, we'll just take a few of your rare earth elements along the way. So it's not like the Red Army's gonna come roaring across the Hindu Kush into Afghanistan. It'll be engineers and right. Surveyors and miners, and wow, I can't wait till they bring mountaintop removal to the Hindu Kush.
And historically, they've been really good at those things. They really have. It is their métier, as it were. And I had to get a bottle of aftershave from the gift shop here, and I looked at it, and guess what was on the bottom of it?
Made in China.
It was just everything I got was made in China. You know, just a few toilet articles, stuff like that, a toothbrush, and a big wire brush, and stop me looking like Ted Kaczynski. Oh, by the way, I'm Queen Stephen now.
I'm glad to hear it. Hey, I've got another story out of the Pentagon you might find interesting, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Published by Lambda Legal and Outserve SLDN. Well, they filed a lawsuit on behalf of a couple of members of the United States Air Force because back in February, I didn't know anything about this. Back in February, Trump ordered the Pentagon to create a deploy or get out policy. And what that means is that the Pentagon was supposed to identify any members of the armed services who couldn't be deployed to military posts outside the United States for more than 12 consecutive months and to basically throw out those otherwise honorably serving members.
Well, and I'm worried about that because, you know, really, in order to be a serving member, you have to be a deployable asset. Now, as far as the time length of that is concerned, I'm sure it differs depending on your links.
Well, here's the problem. The armed services have members.
Health-wise, you had to be a deployable asset in order to wear the uniform.
Well, here's how it shakes out. That had not been the case prior to this rule being announced, because you could have honorably serving members of the military who could not be deployed for 12 months overseas, who yet were able to do honorable service here inside the United States. And most of them are health reasons. And so Lambda Legal and a law firm called Winston and Strawn have sued the Pentagon, and it's Roe and Voe versus, well, how about that, Mattis, in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. And the two plaintiffs are HIV-positive members of the United States Air Force.
Well, that's going to be an interesting thing right there. Because, HIV-positive is supposed to be the death bell. And I guess they're still fighting this, correct?
Well, yeah, that's what the lawsuit is about, saying that they've violated no rule. They have not dishonored their oath or the flag or their services.
And they can't ask them how they got it. I don't think they can. I mean, you get HIV anywhere. If you're stupid enough.
Right. Exactly. But.
But just damn unfortunate enough. I mean, you know, I don't mean to say that with any type of callous. Let me take that back. It can find you. It can find many innocent people.
And so the rule was promulgated in February, and just before the beginning of the holiday season, the Trump administration began putting it into effect. Happy holidays. Get the fuck out.
There you go. That's his attitude. And you know what's the plenty of that attitude? I'm going to get off here because I know you got people who want to talk to you. And you want to talk about that agricultural bill. But Trump is of this mind. You know, I have made my unalterable decision and everything stands. And to hell with it. And he doesn't care what. We'll see what he does about the stupid wall he's talking about. You know, Bob, I just never understand. Why do you build a damn fence post with steel slats between two fucking bodies of water? That's
Wait a minute. Yeah, you get a cowbell for that, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Right. No, it's dumber in the head and the hog is in the ass, and the only people who don't realize that are maggots.
I mean, even some of these maggots have farm animals. Don't they realize what they're? I don't want to try to think like they do. No, I can't do it. But I mean, there you are building a wall between two bodies of water. I mean, how stupid the fuck is that?
Atne ute aitbre, if you own a what I eat may.
I guess so. I guess so. Listen, take care.
All right, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and if we don't talk to you beforehand, a very happy Christmas to you. That's our buddy Jim calling from up Morgantown way. And we'll keep the conversation going. Oh, by the way, I need to send out some thanks. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Miss Karen, and Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. The fundraising for both the week, the month, and the year is down to only $390. So, you know, who knows? That might actually happen in the next hour and, 16 minutes or so. Or I'm 14 minutes, hour and 14 minutes or so. You just never know. Let's see. Note coming in from Greg. Mad Dog had a hissy fit and quit. LOL. Dave in Talibandiana says, "Hey Bob and Jim, in Indiana they didn't outlaw the eugenics laws until 1977. I know, because I did some research on it in college and questioned whether I'd been sterilized because I have cerebral palsy. I have not been." Signed, your buddy, Dave. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very, very kindly. And so Marty says, speaking of rare earth elements in Afghanistan, didn't the American puppet Afghan government try to award mining rights to China back in the aughts? That sounds familiar. Randy in PA says, it's not about the wall, and this is no ordinary government shutdown. As Tom Kennedy used to say on his game show, it's not what you do say that counts, it's what you don't say. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa taking issue with me. May I disagree with you on the Afghanistan-Russia matter? I think Pooty Poo wants to give Afghanistan another go. He wants to finish what Gorbachev couldn't. Oh, then I guess we'll be making friends with the Taliban, won't we? That makes my eyeballs ache. It does. It does. And so with the minutes ticking away in the second hour of the program, see, I'm trying not to do time checks anymore. Let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hello. Hey, Bay. Happy Hey Earth Day, say. Jesus. Speaking of Tom Kennedy, whoever that was who wrote, quoting...
That was Randy in PA.
It's not what you say that counts, it's what you don't say. On YouTube, if you look under the Pacific Pioneers Broadcasting Group, there's almost 2 hours worth of video interview with Tom Kennedy, who's up in his 90s at this point. And the video was done a couple of years ago. And for anybody who likes game shows and stuff like that there, and the early history of television, they will enjoy the 2 hours with Tom Kennedy, whose real name was Jim Nars, N-A-R-Z, and he was the brother of Jack Nars, who was a longtime game show host. So there, that's what I know.
Well, I remember Tom Kennedy. I don't remember Jack Nars.
Oh, yeah. He was Jack Nars was on the CBS quiz show called Dotto, D-O-T-T-O. And
that really predates me.
Definitely predates me almost. That was one of the shows that got caught up in the quiz show scandals of the 50s. The big one was the $64,000 question, but Dotto was one of them, and there was one other one. I think 21 was the other game show. God, don't get me started on old TV.
Wasn't Dream House one of them?
I don't know. I remember Dream House. I remember the name of it, but I don't recall that scandal connection. But this is not why I called, by the way. What I'll get to
naturally
in a few minutes. And I'm sorry to keep calling so damn much, but the show
get
is
over
just
yourself
that compelling. Well, no, the show is just that compelling. It's interesting as all get out. But anyway, I want to touch on a couple of things briefly that you and Jim were talking about. First, I'll do it in the form of a video viewing tip. A couple of months ago, PBS did a two-hour documentary under its American Experience banner called The Eugenics Crusade. And for a couple of bucks, like $5 or $6, you can watch it on Amazon Prime, and I recommend it. Anybody who needs a primer on eugenics, that tawdry history, would do well to check out American Experience, The Eugenics Crusade. It was quite well done and scary, too. Food stamps. The last time I checked, I qualified. Are you sitting down for this amount?
Don't spend it all in one place.
I qualify for $16 a month, given my status and stuff. And I just forewent it. Is that the past tense of to forego something? I forewent it.
It is now.
Anyway, I said thanks, but no thanks. I'll leave that $16 a month to somebody who needs it a little more than me. What was the other thing you talked about? Rare earth minerals in Afghanistan. I think what Trump's plan is, if he has such things as plans, is to get the U.S. troops out of there and then install the Blackwater Brigade in the form of a bunch of mercenaries, you know, soldiers for hire, and some big corporations. I would think that Dick Cheney's old company, Halliburton?
Yes.
Brown and Root?
Yeah,
whatever.
Kellogg, Burn, and Loot, yes.
Yeah. to get the troops out because they're costing too much, and put the big conglomerates and the mercenaries in, and it serves the same purpose. It creates the same end. But like you say, with the Chinese and the Russians on the sidelines, that they're not going to sit still for something like that because that'll piss them off and they'll want to get in there and divvy up some of the goodies. But anyway, and the other thing that you and Jim talked about hushed conversations in back offices and bar rooms about a possible coup or something.
Right. Well, I don't know what it would be about, but you got to think there's some people with a lot of jewelry on their shoulders looking at each other going, what the fuck?
Well, a form of it has occurred before within both our lifetimes. And I know that he got a lot of heat for taking liberties. But if you really spend some time watching Oliver Stone's movie JFK and watch it not like you're watching a documentary, but watch it with the mind and the ears and the eyes of someone who knows going in that the essence of each and every assertion or dramatic portrayal is probably better than assertion. Each and every dramatic portrayal in the film JFK is documented. The only thing that Stone was guilty of was compressing and combining events, because he wasn't doing a documentary, first of all. He was doing a theatrical drama. Okay, so there's that. But even as it was, the director's cut runs like 2 hours and 20 minutes or some such. And there's only so long you can hold an audience in a theater, you know, when you're presenting a film. So he did, with the time that he had and the resources that he had, he told a very compelling story. And if there's a book that came out in conjunction with the film, it's called JFK, The Book of the Film. And everything that's asserted or portrayed dramatically in that film is heavily sourced. So anybody interested in seeing where these various notions came from would do well to watch that film and read that book, JFK, The Book of the Film, simply because that's how things happen when you're talking about coups on this side of the Atlantic. It's not anything organized in a big way or stated in a loud way. It's like whispers. It's like a sense. You know how they say, you know, we're going to, the U.S. Senate is going to convey
a sense of the Senate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that same, pardon me, it's that same dynamic. In other words, people who are in a place to know and to see the big picture, and they know what the fuck's going on, and know that something will need to be done about it, and know that the powers that be are either not equipped or not interested in the doing of whatever that something is, will take matters into their own hands. And I don't recommend it, because it is, at the bottom line, an undoing of a bona fide election. So there's that. But, you know, you may not be too far off the mark, because there comes a point when they pass a line in the sand, so to speak, where enough is enough, and that's too much, you know? And I'm not saying it'll happen the same way, but it's not as if it hasn't happened before. And with JFK, it wasn't just the military. It was elements of the intelligence apparatus. But again, that's not why I called. As a matter of fact, I think I've forgotten why I called, catching up on the things that you
were talking. Well, I'm just glad you did. I mean,
oh, Jesus.
But there is some movement on the bill to avert a shutdown.
What are they going to do? Well, I don't see them getting 292 House members of both parties to agree.
Well,
on
but that's that's after a veto.
Yeah.
The House has taken up the Senate bill, and if they fiddle with it, it has to go back to the Senate for another vote. But Ryan isn't even certain of having the votes from his own caucus, and would have to drag it over the line through the good graces of the Democrats.
And would the Democrats play? That's a central question.
Well, the reporting I've seen on it says that if the Democrats help pass it, and it then goes back to the Senate, if there's a nickel in it for the damn wall, the Democrats go, mm-mm, fuck you.
Yeah. And they should.
Yeah. I'm just checking C-SPAN here.
Right.
I'm just checking C-SPAN here to see if we've got anything on the House.
Well, you made mention of a number of the outgoing Republican House members. They've split, baby. They are not doing long goodbyes. They're going on to cushy things in the lobbying in the K Street corridor and business or whatever else they can get their grubby little hands into, because they weren't all that keen on doing a good job during the 2 years they were in office. And now in this, you know, tail end of the lame duck situation, oh, fuck, two tickets to Splitsville, baby. We're out of here.
And they're milling around in the well of the House now. Let's check in with the audio, shall we?
I think we should.
Recorded vote. A recorded vote is requested. Those favoring recorded vote will rise. A sufficient number having risen, a recorded vote is ordered. Members will record their vote by electronic device. This is a 5-minute vote.
Dum, 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 dum.
And one last vote expected here in the House this evening, postponed from yesterday. And the House passing the GOP temporary funding measure to fund the federal government ahead of tomorrow night's midnight deadline. A temporary measure passed by the Senate yesterday failed to move forward after President Trump announced he would not sign a bill that did not include funding for the border wall between the U.S. and Mexico. The new measure includes $5.7 billion for the wall.
Yes, that ain't going anywhere.
So they've passed
what Trump wants. You know, they got down on their knees and, you know, did that thing.
Yeah.
And so now it will go back to the Senate where the Democrats are going to say, oh, no, sorry, no, that's not going to happen. And it's one of those embarrassing moments for Chinless Mitch when he actually has to have the cooperation of the Democrats in order to pass the measure. He can't just ram it through on a 50-49 vote.
And you know what happens when that occurs? It burns. It burns. Mitch's Democratic participation to Mitch is like holy water to the demons. It burns. It burns. I remembered what I called about. And
oh,
then
did
I
you?
Can go.
Oh, good.
Yes. We were earlier via email. I was going back and forth with you about the marching orders from Moscow. Well, Trump is not smart enough to do it on his own, and it wasn't set up during the campaign. So I concluded that somebody is in it with him, or maybe several somebodies. And then I wondered aloud if the NSA has gotten wind of any of these communications that are going back and forth. And you said probably not. I'm wondering if this is Mueller's big card. You might even say Trump card.
The big news out of Mueller today was that because this hasn't happened before, he formally requested an official transcript of the testimony that Roger Stone gave to the House. And I know you're a big Roger Stone fan.
Yeah, tell me.
So there's really no reason to do that unless he is actively pursuing charges against Roger Stone.
Mm-hmm. Who has... back when he was a lobbyist with Manafort, had many dealings in Russia or former Soviet territories. Let the record show. I'm telling folks with Netflix to please watch Get Me Roger Stone. It will bring you up to date on their tawdry history, him and Manafort both. But go on.
And he also has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back, Roger
yes.
Stone.
How scary is that, Bob?
That'll put you off booze and food.
Well, and it's not just the tattoo of Nixon on his back, and it's beyond life size, as I recall. It's hard to get those images out of your head once you've seen them, but they do actually show it. You know,
yeah.
He makes Lydia the tattooed lady that Groucho sang about look like a rank amateur in the realm of body art.
Oh, I remember those innocent days when America was kind of stunned to find out that George Shultz had a Princeton Tiger tattooed on his ass.
Really? That I didn't know.
I thought everybody knew that.
The thought of George Shultz's ass. It's frightening on its own.
Well, no, what the mental image that just came up with me with Roger, you know, you reckon Richard Nixon's ever gotten a back zit on the end of his nose? Well, there went dinner in the Pacific time zone.
Oh, fuck, you're almost to the Leeward Islands or whatever they're called, Guam. And anyway, yeah, but let's look at what Mueller.
Or right there in
at.
Nixon's beady little eye.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I really screwed dinner with that last sound effect there.
I will be fasting tonight. You know, Mueller originally his mandate was to look at possible collusion with the Russians and the Trump people in the 2016 campaign. But as rocks are lifted and bugs are found and testimony is given and convictions have occurred, that widens the vista. So, I mean, the end game, the natural conclusion would be, as these revelations are being made known, because that is, after all, the dynamic of revelations, you've got to tie it up in some way or another. And if the idea is to be a puppet for Putin, then there must be some communication going on. And you got to wonder if Mueller, if that's within his wheelhouse and he's getting information, because, see, we're at the disadvantage. We don't know what he knows, you know, and we're at a disadvantage. He could be so far along in this process that, you know, sometime shortly after the first of the year, the proverbial shit could hit the proverbial fan. I mean, and they say that Trump is like wound up like an 8-day clock in terms of how off the twig he has become. I say has become like it's some ancient event. I mean, he's scared.
Oh, I think he's terrified. And he doesn't know what others know. Now, on the other hand, however, he may know a little more than he used to know relative to the Mueller investigation, because we found out in the last 24 hours that Matt Hot Tub Time Machine Whitaker has been briefed on the complete status of the Mueller investigation, and expecting that guy to not run tattling to the White House is like expecting a Jehovah's Witness to stay off your porch.
Yeah. And there's the matter of Barr. I think that's his name. The guy that Trump wants to be the next attorney general. It was noted in the press today that there was a big document, a big essay or something that he wrote, slamming Mueller.
Right.
Left, right, and center. So,
and Schumer announced that that's enough to disqualify him, and so therefore he should withdraw the nomination and do something else.
Yeah.
Which means that Trump will just double down on him and declare that he'll be the greatest attorney general America has ever had, ever. Even though he's been attorney general before, he'll be better than the attorney general he was then. He'll be the greatest attorney general because he'll be my attorney general.
Well, and we've seen the game plan before. It'll be a Kavanaugh redux. You know, he'll double down and the weak sisters, if you will, in the Republican Party, of which there are many, the whiners and the scaredy cats. I give you, Senator Graham of South Carolina.
Senator Graham is incensed, Scott. He is positively incensed that we are pulling out of Syria.
Has he gotten the vapors? Have they called the
doctor? He put that out from underneath the fainting couch down there at the ancestral estate of smoldering chode.
Well, there you go.
But here's the biggest maggot in the entire United States Senate, Tom Cotton.
Oh, God.
Of Arkansas, signed off on the letter saying this is a horrible mistake. And usually the best place to find Tom Cotton is to ask Donald Trump to yawn for you so you can see Tom Cotton's smiling face in the back of his throat having crawled up there by putting his head up his ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in integrity and courage, to paraphrase the late, great Fred Allen, all the integrity and courage in the Republican Senate could fit conveniently in the navel of a flea, and there'd still be room for three caraway seeds and a lone officer's heart. So.
Well, here's a giggle for us. Devin just sent this graphic along, and it's beautiful.
All right.
It's a line drawing of Kim Jong-un giving a middle finger to the people looking at the poster. And it said, "Who's got the crazy leader now, motherfuckers?"
I'd like to see Trump get one of them haircuts like Kim. I think that would scare women, children, and horses in the street.
Well, nothing lately can compare with the spray on hair of Stephen Miller.
Oh God, yeah. The other day you were telling Jim or somebody who had called about your notion that Trump only has one hair, and it's like 40 feet long, 40 yards long or whatever, and it has to be intricately wound and matted and sprayed.
Yeah, he has to be wound every morning like the coils of an electric guitar pickup.
There was one of the documentaries that I watched, and I forget what it was. Oh, I know, it was from in the circus series on Showtime, and Mark Halpern's getting a haircut in some red state, and he says, "Well, do I to the barber?" He says, "Do I dare bring up the topic of Trump?" And the barber says, "Sure, go ahead." And Mark says, "Well, what do you think?" To the barber, he says, "What do you think of Trump's hair?" I guess as an icebreaker to start the conversation off. And the barber says, "Well, I'd sure like a crack at it. I'd like to see what's going on there." Pardon me. Got Thomas's cough. Well, listen, I'll sign off, I think. Unless you've got more, I mean.
Oh, no, I've got more stuff I'm going to go into, but.
I just think, you know, to sum it up, I just think that Mueller has got to know way more than anybody thinks he knows, certainly more than Trump thinks he knows. And he's not kidding around. You know, if I know anything about the guy, he is definitely not fucking around here. He's got a mandate, and he's going to see it through, come hell or high water. Do I hear crickets?
No.
Wait a minute.
Might be the creaking of my chair.
No, I think it's a cricket here. They say in Chinese folklore, if you find a cricket in your house, it's good luck.
Yeah, that's good luck.
I have found a couple of them in the last 6 weeks or so. So maybe there's... No, that was my chair.
Japanese cultures make these lovely little cricket cages.
I think I've seen those.
But then again, they also tie a piece of thread onto the leg of a praying mantis and let it stay in the bedroom and eat mosquitoes all night. You know, with enough slack in the line to sort of hop around and fly around some and, you know.
Have these people not heard of Shell No Pest Strips, for Christ's sake? I mean, come on.
Well, you know, when it's worked for 10,000 years, you're loath to go to better living through chemistry.
Well, I guess the old school ways are the best, Bob.
yeah, what you said.
All right.
Hey, Scott, have yourself a good evening, my friend, and go boil yourself up some water and have a rousing cup of the finest freeze-dried coffee that San Diego has to offer.
I believe I shall, Bob, and I'll drink a toast to you.
Well,
once it cools off, getting all saucered and blowed like.
Well, bless your pea-picking heart.
Well, thank you. Take care.
You take care.
By the way,
yeah.
Don't fret too much about that donut tire. I heard tell some years ago that the same damn thing happened to Kenny Rogers, you know, the bearded singer.
Yes.
Way back when he didn't have hardly a pop to piss in when he was first.
Nor a winder to throw it out in, right?
And he had put one of them donut tires on his car and was riding on down the road.
You don't say.
And that damn thing flew plumb off.
Well, that's what I was worried about.
No property damage. Nobody was hurt. Nary a scratch.
I bet he wrote a song about it.
He wrote a song about it, Bob. You know the name of that song?
I do, but you tell us.
You picked the wrong time to leave me, Loose Wheel.
Yes.
So on that happy note, I'm going to go back into my cricket cage and see what I can catch.
Well, I think you should, and share it with the cricket if and you do.
I shall. You take care, Bob, and give my best to the loved ones. And if you see any Republicans coming away from the house like a bat out of hell, you just know that those folks don't linger on the porch or in the parlor or nowhere else. They're out of there, baby.
Indeed they are. Scott, take care, and a happy solstice and holidays and Christmas and New Year's to you.
At 2:23 tomorrow, Bob, I'm going to be naked, and I'm going to be dancing around welcoming the winter solstice.
Whee!
Under the palm tree in the front yard. I'm serious. I'm serious, Bob.
It's always, and it's always sunny in San Diego.
So send the bail money to Scott in San Diego, care of the Who's Gal, and they'll take care of it.
Yeah, and you just text messages when it's time to send the bail money.
I'll send you a pretty picture.
A text message will be just fine. Thank you very much.
You can see what I've got tattooed on my butt. I bet you never guess. Goodbye, Bob.
Goodbye, Scott. And I ain't going to worry about it. I ain't even going to think about it.
I don't blame you.
I'm already kind of tormented by the zit in Nixon's eye on Roger Stone's back. So,
you know, you're already up, Knights.
There we go. Later now.
All right. See ya.
See ya. The one and only Scott in San Diego. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. By the way, note coming in from Clarence, subject line U.S. foreign policy. Bob, the sudden withdrawal from Syria is nothing new for the U.S. If you search the word abandonment, a picture of the U.S. flag would be in the definition. If anyone has any doubt about the word loyalty, just ask the peace people from the following countries. South Vietnam, Montagnard minority fought for the U.S. Laos, Hmong minority fought for the U.S. Iraq, at least the U.S. policy toward allowed those who helped during the war to come to the U.S. Now the U.S. Kurds will experience the chaos of a U.S. withdrawal. The aftermath is always brutal. The Turks will have a good old time using U.S.-supplied weapons to exterminate the Kurds. I do not see Trump offering a similar policy. No. In fact, the exact opposite. This story's 3 or 4 days old. But in the latest act of perfidious madness, the Trump administration has decided to shit on people who we allowed to come here from Vietnam after they had cooperated and collaborated with us in that war. And Donald Trump now wants to throw a bunch of them out, even though we've already got a treaty with Vietnam that says we won't do that. How about that? Loyalty, not a strong suit. No. So we are trying to get down past the $390 mark and finish off fundraising this evening so that we can have fundraising free solstice on the front porch and fundraising free radio all next week. And along the way, I can do something frivolous like probably buying 4 new tires and saying Merry Christmas to the family about that. So there we go. That's where we stand if you want to help out over at the PayPal button at headon.live. Wait, says Brother Deacon Asa. Yesterday we were exposed to Thomas's junk, and today we have to put up with Scott dancing buck naked in San Diego. You know, that Norman Goldman problem is starting to sound awful good right about now. He ain't got no naked. I know. It's not my fault, Asa. Ain't got no well, it is my fault. I'm the one that does naked radio during the warm weather months, so I guess I kind of did start it, sort of. And, yeah, the details are coming out now. The Trump regime wants to pull about 7,000 service members out of Afghanistan, and that's about half the number of troops that are presently there. He's gonna get that Trump Tower Moscow or bust in the process. By the way, the Trump Tower Moscow letter of intent, that he said he never saw, never signed, never. Yeah, that's a real thing, and it actually exists, and he did sign it. And it goes back to 2015. But why would we be surprised? Everything he says, well, that creates a paradox and a conundrum and stuff. Everything he says is a lie. But that's about how it shapes up and shakes out. What else? Another lovely day for the stock market. Yeah, that's funny. He's not tweeting much about the fabulous stock market anymore. What were the final numbers today? The Dow closed down minus 464.06 and closed down at under 23,000 for the first time in well over a year, if not years. The NASDAQ was off 108 points. The S&P 500 was down 39.54, excuse me. On the other hand, the Hang Seng Index was in relatively decent shape. It's the only one that lately is in the green. He's some business genius, that geezer Disgustus. Irish Dave says, so what venom is coming out of Tom's cotton mouth now? Very well played. So who rats his one hair now that Mr. Ann has become all disaffected and shit? Well, you know. Well, thank you, Waldo. It's called the Epimenides Paradox. Everything I say is a lie. Therefore, right. The Epimenides Paradox, otherwise known as I Get a Headache. Jesus. And one of the weirder stories of the day, because there's always some weird stories. No, let's go here first. Let's go to the halls of Congress. Today, where Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, a woman who doesn't give a good goddamn when seven-year-olds die of dehydration. Well, she got a good dressing down by Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. Steve in New York said earlier in reference to this, have to find it. Oh, doggone it. I don't know where it went, but Steve alerted me to the story. Luis Gutierrez was not nice to Kirstjen Nielsen today. And if nothing else, the clip is worth playing solely for the refreshing quality of hearing someone speak truth to one of these criminal thugs from the administration regime that is chock-a-block with maggots. Maggot-infested, we might say. This goes on a little while, but you're liable to wind up standing up and clapping.
And division. But I have to say the all-time record for lying in the face of all the evidence was a tweet you, Madam Secretary, sent out on June the 17th. And it says, "We do not have a policy of separating families at the border, period." That's your Twitter account. That's what you put out. Yet you came here today to tell us exactly is your policy of separating families and children from their families. Another lie. I know I have 45 seconds. I won't take them all. But it is repugnant to me and astonishing to me that during Christmas, I like to call them the holiday seasons to be inclusive, but during Christmas, because the majority always wants to just call it Christmas, that during Christmas, a time in which we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ.
Now, get ready, because if you're not careful, you're going to hear something said here that would almost make you think that Luis Gutierrez secretly listens to the horn, because I think this goes back to Friday. On the other hand, there's Kirstjen Nielsen with her perfect dye job, sitting there at the witness table, writing a note down here and there, and she looks like the picture that would accompany the dictionary definition if you were to look up Hannah Arendt's term, the banality of evil. Just, well, goodness me, my life is good. But Representative Gutierrez is just getting started.
A Jesus Christ who had to flee for his life with Mary and Joseph. Thank God there wasn't a wall that stopped him from seeking refuge in Egypt. Thank God that wall wasn't there. And thank God there wasn't an administration like this, or he would have too have perished on the 28th, on the Day of Innocence, when Herod ordered the murder of every child under 2 years of age.
Now, hold on here, just so you can know. During those remarks, Kirstjen Nielsen rolled her eyes and gave a big sigh. Because they just don't understand Kirstjen Nielsen. They don't understand how much she loves America, and that she shows how much she loves America by putting those filthy little foreign children in cages where they goddamn well belong.
Maybe I haven't gone a lot to Bible school, but I know that part. Thank God. Shame on everybody that separates children and allows them to stay at the other side of the border, fearing death, fearing hunger, fearing sickness. Shame on us for wearing our badge of Christianity during Christmas and allow the secretary to come here and lie. Thank you.
Time of the gentleman has expired. The secretary would care to respond to any of that.
Only then to say that calling me a liar are fighting words. I'm not a liar. We've never had a policy for family separation. I'm happy to walk the gentleman through it again. A policy of family separation would mean that any family that I encountered in the interior, I would separate.
Now, granted, she didn't scream about liking beer, but isn't it interesting that she uses the term, calling me a liar is fighting words? I'll bet you Kirstjen Nielsen has some sort of a legal background, and I'll bet you damn good and well she knows exactly what fighting words means in a legal context. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco, subject line, tired. 45 has said things that in any professional organization a person would be fired. I've fired people for saying less, but in the process had created a hostile work environment. Maybe one day he'll be brought to the same level of accountability as a cashier. Well, maybe. Maybe, Matt. We can hope. We can hope. But it's gonna take a lot for that to happen. Now, Kirstjen Nielsen is a liar. And she's trying to finesse her way out of it. And it really doesn't play.
It would mean that any family that I found at a port of entry, I would separate. It would mean that every single family that I found illegally crossing, we would separate. We did none of those. What we did do is uphold the laws that Congress has passed, and we prosecuted those who choose to come here illegally. As far as not being compassionate, let me just tell you what I have done. And of course, he couldn't be bothered to stay, so I'm happy to tell the rest of the committee. What we have done.
Yeah, because he got up and walked out on the bleach blonde liar. She is disgusting. And everything that she said there about it would mean this or it would mean that. No, the fact of the matter is we have children in cages. We have a camp on the border in which children are incarcerated in a, it's a concentration camp. And the whole business about crossing into the country illegally, it is not illegal to seek asylum in the United States because we used to pride ourselves on our merciful and compassionate nature, which was not nearly as merciful or as compassionate as we would have had ourselves believe. But yes, you can apply for asylum at the border. But because they closed the ports of entry, people had to enter at places deemed to be illegal, which they then took advantage of and separated children. But Representative Gutierrez is absolutely right. If only Herod the Great had had a Kirstjen Nielsen working for him, I'm sure little baby Jesus wouldn't have made it to Egypt. Now, never mind the fact that there's no historical support for the actual slaughter, the murder of the innocents. It probably didn't happen. In fact, most of it probably didn't happen. But that's the thing about myth. Myth teaches us about ourselves. Myth gives us a point of reference by which we can understand our own humanity. And in that myth, Kirstjen Nielsen, well, I don't know, maybe she's reincarnated from Salome. You know, bring me the head of John the Baptist, or Alfredo Garcia, whichever. Or some little 7-year-old girl from Guatemala, whichever one's handiest. Right, Madam Secretary? Oh, and remember, this was John Kelly's hand-picked successor at Homeland Security. The bottom line is, she needs to be standing in the dock in The Hague. And she needs to be answering charges of crimes against humanity. And then, when convicted, she needs to spend the rest of her life in a little cell. Forever and ever. Amen. Now, the funniest part is when Louis Asparagus Gohmert tries to, and this is a legal term, rehabilitate the witness. And he asks, for my colleague to the left, if Mary and Joseph were trying to come into the United States under the situation that existed, and King Herod was trying to kill everybody under two, wouldn't they be eligible for asylum in the United States? And Kirstjen says, yes. So he can scratch that from his concerns. Well, there are thousands of children who were seeking asylum in the United States who have been put in fucking dog cages. So, you know, enjoy moments like this. I want to believe in a burning hell so badly because I want to say, hey, Kirsten, enjoy your time here on Earth because it's all reverse pineapples in the hereafter. God, what a disgusting attempt at a member of the human race. Yeah, by the way, one of the reasons Trump is not particularly broken up about the exit of Defense Secretary Mattis is that, he's been slurring Mattis for a while, referring to him as moderate Secretary Mattis and kind of a Democrat Secretary Mattis. But what pissed him off the most, as reported by Caitlin Collins of CNN, she said, President Trump has grown irritated with the narrative that Mattis was the adult in the room. I don't know that I'm willing to sign off on that idea, but still, whatever room Donald Trump is the membership of that room minus one when it comes to adults. But hey, we need a giggle once in a while. You remember Katrina Pearson, the maggot, who wore the necklace with the bullet on it? She was on the Twitter not too awfully long ago, earlier this evening. And she was all head up about the Steele dossier, because they're all head up about the Steele dossier. But she tweeted the following. Since everyone is just now realizing his staffer's role in the Russia hoax, we've been asking questions. John McCain still refuses to answer questions about his role in the dossier. And linking to... No, this is not a joke. This is not parody. This is not The Onion. Linking to an article. John McCain still refuses to answer questions about his role in the dossier from 2017. Katrina Pearson having not quite realized that John McCain is, dead. Much hilarity ensued, people saying things like, Katrina Pearson screaming at McCain's gravestone, answer me, goddammit! Or Trump campaign advisor Katrina Pearson in her office screaming questions at a Ouija board. Surprisingly, the only thing missing was a picture of Bones and Kirk in a meme saying, he's dead, Jim. Yeah. And I think, I really do think, and I'll just note that as we roll toward the end of the program here, with about 20 minutes left, we're at $390 to go to finish the month, and finish the year, qualify for the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge and the Go Bucks Challenge. And it would be the awesomest thing that has happened in a while if we could do actually finish ahead of schedule and have a fundraising-free solstice on the front porch. That would be just flippin' awesome. But I do. I want to go back to this story about the food stamps. Because this is, you know, this is going to have an impact on people in this community, conceivably. They signed the farm bill. They headed for the doors. But prior in the day today, this morning, the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue of Georgia, well, he followed through on something he had previously said. There was a compromise in the House and Senate to get the farm bill done. And Perdue did an end run on that compromise. Politico had the article, Morning Agriculture. This goes back to the beginning of the month. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue tipped his hand on how the administration plans to assuage House conservatives who wanted stricter SNAP work requirements in the final legislation. Once the bill passes, USDA will issue a proposed rule to crack down on work requirement waivers. That's what they did. And so no one who has been elected, no one who is answerable to the voters, has just made a decision. And 800,000 Americans are likely to lose access to what little bit they get from SNAP in the first place. And then mistakes will be made. And because mistakes will be made, and they're always made, there will be more people beyond the 800,000 who go hungry. What Sonny Perdue wants to do is go after what are called ABAWD waivers. Able-bodied adults without dependents. And the waivers are designed to make sure that people can continue to eat, especially when the economy heads south. And states can get those ABAWD waivers anywhere that the local unemployment rates are 20% above average, or in places where there are fewer jobs available than there are people who need jobs. Well, when Sonny Perdue's maggot rule takes effect, those waivers will largely disappear, and that will happen sometime in 2019. The new rule says no waiver can be granted in a place where unemployment rates are lower than 7%. And it doesn't matter if it can be shown that there are too few jobs to be had such that people who are unemployed can find anything meaningful work. This again from Sonny Perdue, who considers himself a follower of Jesus Christ. And among those who have gone after the ABAWD waivers previously, well, top of the list, Mike Pencilneck Geek, never Trumper potential 2020 Republican challenger John Kasich, Scott Walker, Sam Brownback, and Paul LePage. with the exception of John Kasich, just about every one of those damn near ruined their individual states. And meanwhile, food or no food, there won't be any jobs. And all of it goes back to the hammer and tongs approach to hungry people that good, practicing Roman Catholic Paul Ryan has dreamed of his entire miserable life. Remember, Paul Ryan said that if people get to eat food, that they might develop a government dependency hammock. He also made the hammock reference when he was talking about killing Medicaid, killing Medicare, getting rid of Social Security, food stamps. Anything that meant money that he was not giving to the wealthiest among us. The poor, poor, poor rich. So it's not going to happen tomorrow, but pay attention. And hey, did you need further inspiration to get active and stay active and get activer on the road to 2020? If so, your fellow Americans who would like not to starve to death could use your assistance. As Scott points out, the poor red state voters are really screwed. Whatever happened to the promises of the jobs, jobs, jobs president? I guess those folks whose food stamp allotment is being cut are going to need to brush up on their loaves and fishes trick skills. And there we are, fresh out of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Just makes you want to fire up Lee Greenwood and start a singing God Bless the USA. Let's back away from some of this highfalutin government and stuff, shall we? Instead, let's look at the effect of having an unrepentant white supremacist in the White House. Robert Spencer just settled a First Amendment lawsuit in Ohio for about $80,000. Garfield Heights, Ohio, where police officers Kenneth Falzini and David Simia claimed that Mr. Spencer had shoved them while resisting arrest. The only problem was Mr. Spencer's girlfriend videoed the entire transaction. I probably don't have to mention that Robert Spencer is an African-American man. Now, he probably should not have, but who am I? You gotta admire the chutzpah. He referred to the two cops as Beavis and Butthead. And another time, referred to them as Elvis. At one point, he said, "Y'all got the motherfucking right to remain rank." At no point in time did he threaten the officers. What he did was laugh at them. Officer Simia said,
All you had to do was shut the fuck up. We weren't even going to arrest you.
They threw him in jail for 3 days. That's how long it took him to post bond. While he was there, one of the screws made him clean the cell and threatened him and others with a good pepper spraying if they gave him any lip. The case had, and now this is a case of prosecutorial failure. The case was allowed to go to trial, and the jury laughed the case out of court. And so Garfield Heights is out $80,000, or at least their insurance company is. And they've promised, as part of the closure of the case, that they actually will try to train their officers about the fact that here in the new United States of America, we have a First Amendment, and that they can't go rousting people who find them risible. On the other hand, he's still awaiting two other trials in Cuyahoga County. Failure to comply, obstructing official business, and drug trafficking and possession. Jesus Christ. Wonder how dummied up those charges are. Oh, but America, America, America. Let's run out to Denver, though, as we wind down the program, where a video was taken of course, a white guy who, I guess, was given a big old sad because a woman was speaking Spanish in, you know, Denver. A young woman, a mother, by the name of Mari, was waiting for the bus when a guy came up and started screaming racist insults at her. Let's check in. The video from Fox 31 and Colorado's own number 2 News.
Tuesday morning at a bus stop near Broadway and Colfax.
F***ing wet Mexicans. How about that?
A woman waiting for a bus says she was speaking Spanish on her phone when suddenly...
Are you that f***ing stupid?
This man came up behind her.
Is there beans stuffed in your... Right?
And began harassing her, and at one point asking her this.
Why you talk Mexican Spanish? Not like Mexicans?
Were you scared?
Yes.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And the president don't mind if I say racist things. And it gets played on TV. And I'd proudly stand up any day, 'cause my skin is pale and white. And I'd verbally abuse people not like me, 'cause I think that is my right.
America, what a country. And then off to San Francisco, where a police officer who was already in hot water for the racist text messages that he'd been sending, a guy named Rain Olson Daugherty, who had been on the SFPD for 20 years, sued the San Francisco Police Department back in 2015 on behalf of himself and eight other police officers, trying to block the police department from punishing them for sending racist and homophobic text messages, jokes about burning crosses and shooting African-American acquaintances. It all came out in a federal trial of another cop, Sergeant Ian Firminger. And oddly enough, he won his lawsuit because the judge said the city had waited too long to discipline them for being racist. Now, here's the damnedest thing. Officer Daugherty walked into a bank, an East West bank, handed him a teller a note that asked for all the cash, and got out with $9,050. Showed up on the video, wasn't wearing a disguise, identified by a couple of officers who saw the footage that the police circulated, and they went, "Oh yeah, that's old Officer Rain Daugherty." Remember how I told you that the guy in Ohio spent 3 days in jail trying to make bail for laughing at a pair of cops? Well, this guy who robbed a bank was arrested and bailed out of jail on a $100,000 bond. I don't think any moss grew on him there in holding. I remember when John Edwards said there are two Americas. Do you know what? He was right. He was so very right. So here we are at the end of the program. Tomorrow evening, it'll be a race to the finish line to see if we can knock out that last $390 of fundraising. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thanks very kindly to Clarence and to John and to Chris in the Northwest Territories. Thank you, Steve and Ms. Karen, Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.